Jesus, fill me with thy love.
That story of Mary Magdalene coming and finding the tomb empty, the rest of the story isn't included in this reading, but of course it's in the Bible. When she finds Peter and John and says the tomb is empty, of course they're also just overwhelmed with that thought. I don't think the first thought that occurs to them is that he's risen from the dead. They just think, just as Mary did, that his enemies have taken his body away. Not only did they crucify him on Good Friday, but they actually took his body away. So they're very alarmed, and all three of them come running back to where the tomb is. And the two men go inside, and they see, certainly, that there's no body there anymore. And they see the winding sheets, and they comment that it's as if the body part was put in one place and as if the person lifted off the rest of it and put in another. I mean, these are little details that are interesting. Did he stand up? Did he become physically well? Did he dematerialize and go to another reality? I mean, all of these details one has to only imagine unless you're a master or can relive it in vision. But then there are angels that appear, and the angels say, "Why do you seek for the living among the dead?" To such an obvious question. There they are in a tomb because they have this idea in their mind that Jesus is dead. So they're in the place of the dead, but the angels say to them, "Why are you looking? He's not dead." I mean, that's the beginning of the answer. His body may have passed, but everything that is him is still existing. And Mary Magdalene comes, and she's weeping outside of the tomb because she was the one, she and John had stood there and watched him be crucified. And she, with Mary, his mother, had taken him off the cross and prepared him as best they could and put him in the tomb. I mean, she was completely engaged, and nothing is written about those days in between, but one can only imagine what her state of consciousness was. And she hadn't yet been lifted because she was in deep mourning at this point. So someone appears to her whom she imagines to be the gardener. This is such a sweet sort of way in which the constant confusion of the mind is, and even of the heart, is continually put in front of us. Here she loves Jesus more than anything in the world. She has been there with him when he died. She's the first one to see that he is gone from the tomb. She's weeping, and this form comes and says, "Why are you weeping?" She says, "Because they have taken away the Lord. Do you know where they have taken him?" And then that figure says, "Mary." And when he says her name, all of a sudden she realizes that this figure in front of her is Jesus himself. So she was also the first to see him resurrected. And then, you know, everything in that moment shifts. He says to her, though, "Don't touch me yet. I am not yet fully ascended." Master said that's an esoteric reference to the 3 days required to transition through all the physical, astral, and causal realms. I can't understand any of it, but that's how it's told. But he says, "I'm not quite with you yet." So then she has this responsibility, which she carries out at this point and for the rest of her life. Mary Magdalene has always been the one who had absolute disregard for what anybody else thought. She wasn't waiting for people to tell her who this was. She wasn't waiting for people to give her instructions about what she should do. She was the one who came when Jesus was having dinner and knelt at his feet and washed his feet with costly ointment and dried his feet with her hair. And others were just standing back like, "This is really too much." And Mary just looked at them. "What do I care what you think? How could I possibly care what you think?" You know, just beyond indifference. Just, they didn't exist for her. There was one reality to her, and that reality was Jesus. So it's no surprise that again, the first time he rises, she's the one who sees him. So then she has to go and try to convince the other disciples, who are not against the thought, but how could they know for sure? And you can imagine, put yourself in that situation. Mary has been probably nearly out of her mind with grief. And then all of a sudden she solved the problem because Jesus has resurrected. So it's easy to perhaps to criticize, well, they should have believed her. It's also perfectly understandable why they were a little hesitant. Also because, you know, we want to believe. They want to think that this story is going to have a different ending than it's had. But how do they know? But then all the apostles, all of them are gathered together that evening. And Swamiji always points out they had great faith in what they were doing. Because in their hour of suffering, how did they seek to comfort themselves? By finding each other. You know, it's always a very serious question on the spiritual path. When your faith is challenged, when your ideas of how things are supposed to be, when you find yourself in suffering and turmoil that you don't expect, where do you turn for comfort? And when you turn back toward those who also will encourage you and share with you faith in God, that's a sign in itself of who you are and what you're doing. Be very careful of that single thought. Whenever your mind starts telling you, oh, I'm too sad to go to temple today. I'm too upset to meditate. I really don't want to see my positive friends. I'll bring them down. That's the word that we say. No, no, they'll bring you up. So the disciples are gathered together. And the door is locked because they're afraid that they're going to be crucified next. And they had every reason in the world to fear. The power of the world has taken over their spiritual life. And many times in the history of the world, the power of the world takes over the spiritual. There's no simple guarantee here that in the little, small plot of this world that the good guys always win. Often they don't at all. Often darkness prevails for a while. So they're very frightened. They have no idea what to do. And then all of a sudden, as it is written, Jesus appears in the midst of them. The door did not open. He did not walk into the room. He wasn't there, and then he was. I mean, just picture that for a moment. We're all standing here, and then there's another standing with us. As fast as you could see it happen, there's another standing with us. Just feel what that must have meant to them. I saw a film once of a woman visionary who had visions of Mother Mary. And she was talking in her ordinary state of consciousness. And even as the camera was on her, suddenly she shifted into that state of awareness. And it was faster than you could see. But you could see that just in a breath or less, everything had changed. Because it's always our consciousness. So there they are. And then Jesus says, and what does he say? Peace be upon you. And Swamiji writes in another place, you know, that is the absolute resolution of all our sufferings, is that after a time, all that turmoil, what is suffering? Suffering is just that. It's turmoil, isn't it? It's that everything is going in one way and then all of a sudden it's going in another, and the mind will not stay focused and the heart is broken and the spirit runs from room to room looking for a place where this is not happening. And then all of a sudden, or over time, we always even put it that way, don't we? I've come to peace with this. It was difficult at first, but I've come to peace with this. So here are the disciples who suddenly have through all this hope and all this expectation. Now, where are we going to go now? Everything about life was defined by this. All of a sudden, Jesus is standing among them. And the power of this is, this wasn't a vision. This wasn't them sort of seeing a shimmery form and it just flickered in front of them. It was, he was actually there in his physical body. And as you read the Acts of the Apostles that go on later, I mean, even just this part, Jesus appeared many times over 40 days. It wasn't really that he just came to the disciples that night or Mary in the garden earlier. For 40 days, for more than a month, he came and went. at different times. Two disciples are walking down the road sometime later, and they're talking about all the events. And there's a man comes and starts talking with him. He asks, "What are you talking about?" And said, "You're probably the only one in the whole of this country who doesn't know." And they start explaining to him about Jesus and who he was and how he was crucified. And then all of a sudden they realize that it's Jesus himself who's walking with them. You know, he must have been enjoying himself. On another occasion, he's on the beach. And he invites the fishermen in, and they realize, well, Peter realizes that the boat is coming, and Peter realizes it's the Lord, and he jumps out of the boat and rushes through the water. And then Jesus is frying fish. I mean, it's such a detail in the Bible. He's frying fish, and they sit down and they have dinner together. But what the Bible is telling us in that utterly prosaic way is this was not a vision. He just came back. Now, yes, it's true, in Autobiography of a Yogi, we hear about Lahiri Mahashaya appearing, Sri Yukteswar appearing, and there are other examples of great souls, of masters who, for whom death is no obstacle, who are laughably, they just laugh at the limitations of the rest of us. You know, this body is nothing but a pattern of energy held together by our thoughts and by our will. We are not aware of that. But that's why as soon as the soul, as soon as the animating spirit is withdrawn, the body begins to disintegrate almost immediately. If you've ever had the opportunity to be anywhere near a body that is now empty, it's just quite surprising how quickly it just disintegrates, most unpleasantly, actually, which is why in our country we just whisk them away so nobody has to see it. But if the body sits for a while, it disintegrates in the most unpleasant way. Because what holds it together is this power of thought and this power of will. And a great master, of course, lives entirely on that plane. Many times in his life, Jesus just showed that nothing in this physical world that bound the rest of us bound him at all. Oh, there's a distance, I'll walk on the water. Oh, we're out of wine, I'll just take this water and turn it into wine. Oh, Lazarus is dead, oh, let's have Lazarus just live again. Oh, this poor man has no eyes, he can't see here. You can see again. He just, we're frozen. We're frozen here in this world. And the masters just walk through and show us that it means nothing at all. Nothing at all. Now, think of the implications of that. And that's what the whole of spiritual life is. It's the implications of that. This story, if one man can do it, and Jesus says to us, "That which I do, ye shall do, and greater things." Why do you call me Lord? He says, "Do not your scriptures say that ye are gods?" It's not enough, although it is a comfort, to believe that one who loved us so deeply and lived so perfectly is there and can still reach us and can still change our consciousness. But the promise, that's just the beginning. The promise of his assistance is just the beginning. How is he going to assist us? What is he really going to give us? Oh, what we want him to give us is take away this pain, fulfill this desire, make my life different, break the karmic law. You know, I know that this is the necessary balance, but you know what? I don't want to do it now. When I was setting this in motion, I was enjoying myself completely. But now that I have to pay for what I've spent, no, no. And our prayer is, change it. Isn't that what our prayer is much of the time when you think about it? Change it. Make me stronger, make me healthier, make me different, make him love me, make her love me, make my baby live. Whatever it might be. Make this world not such a weird and confusing and in these days increasingly dark place. Doesn't even happen to have to happen to us for the heart to break. What you read about is just breathtakingly difficult. But what we ask for is make it different. How often do we say, make me different? You know, whatever it is that I'm not understanding, whatever it is that I didn't understand in the past, Make me different. Help me to face. Help me to overcome. So that's the life that Jesus walked. That which I do, ye shall do in greater things. How many really want to take him up on that, right? We want the part that's pleasant and comfortable to the ego, but we don't want to walk the whole walk. What was the walk that he lived? I mean, the walk that he lived was to be glorious, to be profoundly loved, to have the power to reach out and change people's lives completely, to have the satisfaction of having those disciples who could look at him and knew who he was, and that he could, to whom he could give everything. You know, this is how the masters, this is what the masters suffer from the most. If you're going to talk about what they're suffering from, they bring a basket of blessings to us and they offer it all, and we say, well, I'll take a grape. And he'll say, take two? No, no, one is enough. You know? And then they're just there. What can they do? That's why John put it in the Bible so simply, as many as received him. And that was the limiting factor, as many as received him. Because to receive him, we have to look at the whole picture. And the picture was also that the things of this world will ask of you what you didn't want to give. In the life of Jesus, in the life of his disciples, they were looking for this. Jesus was going to be declared the King of the Jews. That's what it looked like just a week ago. Just Palm Sunday, just a week ago. It looked like it finally, they were going to see and know who Jesus was. Everybody's acclaiming him. Everybody's running after him. It couldn't be more glorious. We've been there, right? Couldn't be more glorious. I'm in love. This is it. This is my soulmate. This is what's going to happen. I've got the perfect job. Isn't this a beautiful baby? Whatever it is. This is it. This is glorious. King of the Jews forever, right? Then time passes. And of course, the story of Jesus is the most dramatic possible, because it's not merely that things kind of petered out and weren't quite as promising as they thought they were. Everything just turned from light to dark, so that we won't miss the lesson. And he's arrested, he's humiliated, he's tortured, and he's killed. And then they bury him and his body is gone. I mean, things really can't get much worse. We've hit the bottom. We've all hit the bottom, haven't we? Swami says that hell is said to be eternal because when you're in it, you think it is. It's the truth, isn't it? When the light goes out, you can't remember that there was a light. If you could remember, you wouldn't be there, right? But, and here is what it means to believe in God. I've reduced, after all these years and all these millions of words that have come out of my mouth, in my own mind, it's very simple. The end of the story is happy, more than happy. The end of the story is eternally blissful. The end of the story is absolute triumph. Everything that the heart truly desires. And if we're not there yet, we're not at the end of the story. And in the middle, things happen. You know, Jesus gets crucified and then his body is gone. And then there's this gardener there who doesn't even understand. All these strange things happen, and while we're in them, it's eternal hell. But there's another step. And that step is, there was Jesus in the midst of them. Peace be unto you. And all we have to do, and it's important to understand this, all you have to do is not give up. All you have to do is not quit. I was reading about something of Swami Kriyananda when he went through a very difficult time, when he was separated from all his gurubhais, when all his brothers and sisters in God turned against him and things looked so grim for him. He used this little phrase, I wept buckets, he said. you know? Like a country western song, I wept buckets. But for some reason that struck me very, very, very deeply. Because I knew him to be, and I saw him to be, utterly resurrected from all suffering, utterly transcendent in his victory. But he also wept buckets to get there. So don't be hard on ourselves. You know, sometimes the heart breaks. You overeat, your stomach hurts. You have false expectations about where your happiness comes from. Your heart breaks. It just does. But if we haven't reached the blissful transcendent moment, we're just not finished, that's all. You know? Take a long journey, and sometimes it's not always pleasant getting there, but it's worth the trip. And that's the whole story of Jesus. No matter how dark the suffering, no matter how hopeless the situation, no matter how cruel the experience that's imposed upon you, we're all moving to find that power within us. Master said, God does not test us in order to make us suffer or to break us, but to awaken our own understanding of the divine power that is within us. And that's what our prayer has to be. Not make this easier, take this away, do it differently, but Lord, give me your strength that out of this darkness I can find the light, become the light, and banish that darkness forever.